From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 179 with guest Jose Barreto, recorded Tuesday, September 7th, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you very much, Brandon. This is Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, Richard. How are you?
I'm well, sir. I am just recovering from the jet lag of Tech Ed Australia and New Zealand, where I grabbed a few Run As's solo. Folks you'll recognize. I got one from Rhonda Layfield and a few others, for that matter.
Cool. Very good.
Yeah, lots of fun and great subjects to be talking about there. And we got another one, great one today, too. Let me introduce our guest. Jose Barreto is the Principal Program Manager in the File Server team under Server and Cloud Division at Microsoft. He joined Microsoft in 2002 and worked on several projects there, including the File Server Capacity Tool, Windows Storage Server 2008, which includes the Microsoft iSCSI software target, and the DFS namespaces feature in Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows 7. Welcome, Jose.
Hey, Jose.
Hi there. How's it going?
We're great, sir. So this is one of these technologies we take for granted. Every server set has a file storage somewhere, and yet we're really unhappy when it doesn't work.
That's true. I mean, the file services role in Windows Server is one of the most commonly enabled. And yet we run into it every day, even if we're not really paying attention to it.
You had a great blog post I read a while ago, which I think led me to you in the first place, talking about the different network configurations for file services, stuff I hadn't even thought about bonding multiple NICs together and different cluster configurations for file services, which, again, one of those things where we do that with our SQL servers all the time, but don't think about file storage that way. Do you see it necessary to do this at the server level, or isn't this taken over by the SAN?
Well, typically when you're in a file services configuration, you do have a storage backend, but the failover clustering at that level is very important, especially if you're doing consolidation work, because you're essentially putting a lot of files as part of a single service. So it is important beyond the storage backend that you have in the SAN, that you also add failover capability at the file server layer. It's really helpful.
Now, DFS, well, this technology has gone through a few twitches. I'm thinking back to 2003. What was it called then? FRS, the Remote File Services?
Well, DFS as a technology, the base of it, actually comes all the way back from Windows 2000 days and a little before that. And it's basically the capability to redirect you to create what we call a namespace,
right,
which is a list of locations where you store your files. And then instead of remembering those multiple file server names, you just have to remember the DFS root name. Now, the replication capabilities between those file servers was introduced later. And that one, you're right, it has evolved from the old FRS to the new DFS replication, which uses a more intelligent method of doing the replication.
So what does it mean, intelligent?
Well, in the old days, we did some very basic copying of files around. So typically, if you have a DFS namespace, you basically say, okay, if you want this folder, you go to this specific file server.
Right.
Later on, we introduced the ability to say, if you want this folder, you can go to one of these two or three or more file servers. And then we also introduced the notion of keeping those multiple file server locations in sync. So if you drop a file in one of them, the service copies the file over. Now, what we introduced later on was the ability to not only do a simple copy between them, but do a more what we call a differential copy.
Right.
Meaning that if there was a little bit of a change, instead of sending the whole file over to the other file servers, we'll send just the change.
Well, and FRS was file replication services. I mean, that was really its point right from the very beginning, was to keep files replicated between multiple servers.
Mm-hmm.
And I always found that that worked great as long as we were LAN to LAN. As soon as we got into remote connections, it got a lot tougher.
Yeah, the simple configuration where you have lots of bandwidth, it always makes it easy.
Right.
But over time, we did introduce a few things. For instance, the ability to throttle the copy. So if you do have, say, DFSR, you can set a bandwidth limit. So if you don't want all your link to be, you know, flooded with DFSR replication requests, you can actually set a cap for it.
Okay.
You can also tell the service not to do it all the time, but just do it at a certain time of day. So you can set DFSR to just replicate, say, overnight. So that helps with the replication being, you know, not that intrusive. Of course, if you set something to only replicate overnight, then during that day, if you drop a file in another location, it will take a while for that file to get updated everywhere. So it's always that balance, right? If you want it immediately, then you have to invest in some bandwidth to make it happen. Or you can kind of throw it back and make it happen less frequently, but then you have to cope with the notion that the file doesn't get replicated everywhere immediately.
Now, does the directory structure show through all of these different servers so that you know if a file exists, even if you haven't gotten it off a particular server yet?
Well, yeah, that's the beauty of DFS, is that from a user standpoint, what the user sees is just a regular folder structure, although each folder in that structure might be located in a completely different file server, right? We usually, when people start using DFS, first thing they kind of enjoy is this ability to create what we call the single drive to map, right? So we create this structure that usually based on the name of the domain where you're at. So if you just say /// domain name / namespace that you create, say public or software or some name like that, you see a whole bunch of folders under that namespace, and they could be all over the place.
And in fact, it's invisible to the user where they're actually stored. It doesn't mean anything anymore.
No. It's just an abstraction now. And if you're curious and you're more, you know, of a sophisticated user, in Explorer, if you right-click that folder, there's actually a DFS tab that will give you the details. For instance, which file server are you actually going to, and in case there are many, the many ones that are available and which one you're connected to right now.
And this gets back to this whole issue of now when we start playing with the WAN connection, when are we using a local server and when are we going across the WAN to get things, dealing with that whole issue of minimizing the cost of my WAN bandwidth and the performance penalties around it.
True. One of the things people also enjoy in DFS is that it actually ties with the Active Directory site configuration.
Mm-hmm.
So a client, when they come into the DFS server and say, hey, I want this folder, DFS actually looks at what site the client is in, the Active Directory site, and then looks at all the servers in the different locations and what site those servers are in. So if there's a server in your site, it will point you to that one first.
Interesting.
And even if there are multiple sites at different costs, it will actually give you an ordered list saying, okay, you should first try this one. If it's not there, try this one. And this is all transparent to the user.
But this goes back to that same old statement we've had over and over again, where if you keep your Active Directory up to date, things will work better.
Absolutely. And sites and services is actually something that, you know, when you first install Active Directory, you have that the full first site name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I've seen lots of places where people don't even go there and they don't even change that. But as your network gets more complex and you have multiple sites and you have multiple subnets, you do have to pay a lot of attention to that. Because a lot of what Active Directory does, not only DFS, but Active Directory itself bases the whole replication model off of that set of settings.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to do a study, say on the support services side, to say how many times have we got Active Directory problems because the sitemap is wrong, and AD is trying to do something that's impossible because it's been told there are servers where they aren't, or it's, you know, inefficient links and so forth.
Yeah, it's not only that it's broken. It might just be that because you didn't configure your sites and services, DFS will send you to a remote location to get your files.
Right.
And it will be, you know, extremely slow when you could have been enjoying much better, you know, performance.
And costly, too. One of the emails I got recently was talking about a guy who wants to migrate from FRS to DFS, but because he's got so many remote sites, he's figured out that the cost to resync everything is thousands of dollars and several days of sync time on these WAN connections.
Yep. And when you're resetting those connections, you're basically asking the FSR to basically reseed all the files everywhere, right? So, yep, that can be costly. If you have a lot of data there, then you have to plan that. We have a whole series of guides on how to make that transition, because it does warrant planning, especially if it's a lot of data.
And just to be clear here, if you're migrating from FRS to DFS, you have to resync everything.
Yeah, these are different things. The DFS actually, as a base technology, the DFS namespace, it actually doesn't change. It's
right.
Just a replication piece. So you're effectively migrating from FRS to DFSR, while DFSN, the namespace piece, remains stable throughout the migration.
Now, if somebody's setting up DFSR for the first time, is it possible for him to sneaker net the big chunks of data around to avoid those sync costs?
Yeah, there are multiple ways to do this. So DFSR, when you first create the replication, you assign what the primary site is, you assign all the topology, and you have a wizard with a large set of choices there that you can go and play with. Most people just will do the regular, you know, simple mesh configuration, but you can do some pretty sophisticated things. For instance, you could have a main site that replicates to a lot of the other ones, but you don't let the individual sites replicate to each other.
I see.
So you can you have a lot of flexibility in that configuration. And the way you seed the files initially is also part of it.
So it is possible for me to say ship out some DVDs to some of my remote sites to preload their stores with a bunch of this data.
I'm not specifically saying that you would do it that way, because between the initial seeding and the other one, you have to keep at least a piece of the replication done over the wire.
Right.
Because you want to make sure that even if you have initial files in both sides,
yeah,
and they are almost the same, there is a process to do what we call the resync, where they check. And that's one of the benefits of using DFSR over FRS, right? Is you can see how different those files are.
I see.
And you can send updates over the wire. But you definitely want to make sure that if you are going to ship data around, one of the things that people do to make it all the more simple is to create the main replica while you're close by, and then you ship the box physically to the other side.
Yeah, I guess that's the other side of it, is bring all the file servers into the main office, sync everything, and then push them back out.
Because the process typically is that you build those machines, those file servers, in a central location, then you ship them out. You typically don't build them at the edge, right?
But that is costly too, right? That's moving a lot of servers around if you've got a lot of WAN sites.
That's why people usually have to go through some planning, especially if it's extremely complex.
Sure.
But you see, DFS typically also gets aligned with Active Directory deployment. Because I'm not sure if you're paying attention to how, for instance, the group policy and the login scripts get replicated. But essentially, all those shares that exist in every domain controller are created through DFS and are replicated through DFSR.
Interesting.
So typically, even if people say, oh, we use DFS, and they say, no, we don't really have that much going on DFS. And then we ask, how's your Active Directory deployment? And then they realize, oh, you mean that all those group policy files and all those login scripts are replicated using DFS? And said, yes, that's how it's done, right? So the planning of what becomes the server that handles a specific site typically starts with DNS, AD, includes some DFS, and some other services as well.
So even if you're not using DFS, Active Directory is?
Yep, that's one of the main, you could say, internal users of DFS.
Right.
So that sysvol share.
Yep.
It's actually a DFS share, right?
That makes sense. And it, typically the files that are there aren't that big either.
Not really, no. What lives there, I guess the most important ones, is the file representation of group policy. So, of course, group policy is first created in the database, in the Active Directory database. But when clients are first booting up, they need a simple way to just go out there and grab the group policy objects.
Yeah.
So that is mapped through a file, and that file is replicated to all the main controllers, right?
Right.
So if you have a situation where, I mean, maybe here's kind of a, maybe tell me if this would be a typical use case, and maybe walk us through what does it take to implement this and make it really work. So if I have a few different offices and they all have some convoluted file server name, it's sort of a classic file server style in that one office, and what I really want is for all of my employees at all my offices to be able to go to the same server or namespace name, if you will, and everybody has access to all the same files regardless of where they are. But what I want is I want to have, you know, have higher performance and have those files be available in the local office. It sounds like that's the problem that we're solving. So what does it take to get from here to there? If right now I have file servers sitting in several remote offices that are connected to each other, but they're all individual and they're just islands, how do I go from where I'm at now and get to where I can really enjoy the benefits of DFS, DFSR?
That's a great question, because typically it does require a little bit of planning. So I would suggest at first is you have a domain infrastructure and you have your file servers spread all over the place. So one thing that you could do that is not that complicated is to basically create a namespace, and then in that namespace create a list of all the folders that you share and point them to the file servers where they live today. So right there, first of all, you're doing an inventory of all the file servers you care for, and you're simplifying the user's way of accessing those, because you can now instruct them to, instead of going to the individual file servers, you say, you know, avoid doing that directly to the server. Come here to this list. And usually the users will enjoy that, because they say, oh, you have a consolidated list of everything that I can get you. That's great. So that is the first step, right? When you establish the namespace and you map those, and there's some planning required to do that. Some folks want to have a flat namespace with everything under the same list. Some folks will create like a hierarchical folder structure where you have, for instance, by location or by department. And DFS is very flexible to allow you to do all different kinds of structure for that central namespace that you create, right? The domain namespace. Once you establish that, then you can go around the place and make sure that people are actually leveraging the namespace, not the individual file servers. And once that happens, and that might take a while, right? Because that requires first a little bit of planning, then some user education, and making sure that those pointers are all going to the namespace, then you're a much better place to, for instance, retire some of those file servers, do some consolidation. And at that point, what you have is those file servers are basically pointed to by the namespace, and you can start inserting redundancy. So instead of pointing to a single file server, you can now point to two, maybe one at the branch, one at the main office. And at some point, at least one of the replicas being in the main office for ease of backup, right? And then you can replace server hardware with minimal impact to users as well.
You know, users don't like it when their file shares disappear, even though that's just probably naming, if nothing else. The files themselves aren't gone.
Yeah, there is a balance there. If you move a file server that used to be there under a certain name, you can do it in a way that you can retire that physical file server,
right,
but move that old name to a consolidated file server.
I like that. Because then the user has no idea. We've abstracted the pathing, the naming from the hardware entirely.
Exactly. One of the techniques to do this is DFS, right? But then you have to make sure that they're no longer using that old path. You can combine them and even have, you know, DFS for the new users coming in, and you do some education effort to make sure people don't use the old name. But then just to be safe, you also point that old name into the DFS infrastructure as well. And over time, you know, nobody likes those big disrupting migration
yes.
projects. So you with DFS, you can kind of ease that in over a period of, say, 6 months, 1 year, and do the proper education. And then when the actual migration happens, it's just moving pointers around and users don't have to notice, right?
How does it work? I think about companies that grow like via acquisition, even small businesses that are sort of combining together, and a lot of that going on these days. So if I have, you know, two businesses that all of a sudden, you know, I have two different Active Directories, can I do this cross-directory and cross-domain as well?
Yep. We have a very good infrastructure to establish trust and make that happen with multiple domains being used. And you can certainly have a central namespace that points to another namespace in another domain even, as long as the trusts are in place.
Gotcha. Okay. So using sort of standard domain trust is the method for doing that.
Exactly.
Now, maybe it's a good time to bring up some of these tools. It sounds like we're basically describing the job that the File Server Migration Toolkit does.
Yeah, the File Server Migration Tool is essentially just a wizard or a series of wizards to perform some of these things we're describing here. So, for instance, the renaming of file servers and the bringing together of these multiple names under this new consolidated DFS namespace.
Right.
These are all things that the tool can help you with, and it can also help you with the actual copy itself. At times, this will take a little while, right?
So, sure.
Depending on how much data we're talking about here, moving all that data around, typically you do it in phases. You do like a first pass to move the data over. And then after you do that first pass, you do a second pass. That's just what changed since the initial copy
mm-hmm.
so that you can, because at that point, you're actually wanting to make the transition so people don't update the old servers anymore. So you want to reduce that amount of time you take in the final copy step. But if you have DFS in place, there are actually some interesting strategies that you can do so that the migration is not that disruptive, right? One of them is to basically, instead of doing the traditional copy, if you have DFS namespaces in place, you can just establish a new replica, mm-hmm. let the replication process happen, and then once you're done, you can retire the old replica, right?
Right.
There are intelligent ways to do this, and you can stagger the migration. But, you know, I've seen a lot of folks that basically, you know, bite the bullet and say, okay, let's do the big migration project. Especially these days, consolidation projects are very common as well.
But right.
You can choose your path there.
And mostly this is about turning off hardware, consolidating your hardware down.
Yep. In many cases, that's what it gets down to. You're basically getting out of support on old hardware, or maybe it's a storage backend that's on a lease and you have to move out of it. And you're trying to basically upgrade the infrastructure. I actually have a blog post talking about multiple options to perform the migration and keep your old name And there are plenty of options out there from, simply establishing the namespace, or you can use virtualization as part of the process or create some virtualized file servers. And even clustering, because cluster creates this virtual cluster names and IP addresses, cluster can actually be used as you consolidate. You can consolidate into a clustered file server, and then the names and IPs in the cluster are also somewhat virtual, right?
Right.
So there are multiple strategies that you can use to move a large number of smaller file servers into a more consolidated infrastructure.
And it seems to me that there's absolutely no reason not to virtualize all these file servers. So there's no real benefit to staying on the bare metal.
Yeah, depends on what you're doing. In general, these days, I believe that you actually have to make a point exactly why you want to have something in the bare metal.
Right.
As opposed to in the past, when typically you would say, oh, can this be virtualized? And like a small percentage of things that would be virtualized. These days, it's quite the opposite. It's a very small percentage that gets to be on the bare metal.
Yes.
And there has to be a very good reason for that. And you're right. At times, you will see file servers virtualized, and it's a fair thing to do.
The only issue I know of is generally the access to LUNs, to SANs, although it seems like iSCSI has largely resolved all of those issues.
That's true. iSCSI makes it easy to expose it to the virtual machine.
Right.
As well as the physical machines, and it's a popular method to do that. But in general, the other thing that you have to keep in mind is, let's say you have 100 file servers, right?
Yeah.
And you want to virtualize. So you might want to consider doing some consolidation first. Maybe using namespaces to kind of break that into a smaller set. Because you might be tempted to just go with the physical to virtual, right?
Right.
And you end up with 100 virtual file servers that, there are still management tasks that you want to do. And if you take the time to not just do the virtualization, but actually do it while you do some consolidation as well, that might help you in the long term. Because you don't want to just, physically, run the P2V and keep the old OS and the old settings. There's a lot of change that went into the file server recently from 2008 R2. So a good strategy is to virtualize with DFS first, so that the pointers are going to multiple places, and you have more flexibility to say, take your 100 file servers and bring them down to, say, 3 nodes in a cluster, right? And by all means, the cluster could be virtualized, but a smaller number of machines handling those shares. And we certainly have the capability to have much larger file servers today than we used to have, 10 years ago. So you can get a lot more shares, especially with SMB version 2. You can have a lot more shares per box, and you can certainly scale with more users per file server as well.
Sure. So this proliferation of file servers, and I was just thinking 100 file servers, unless there's tens of thousands of users, I feel like we're doing something wrong. That just seems like a lot, but it really comes down to granular security and localization of shares and those sorts of things that you end up with that many.
Yeah, there's usually a history there, right? When you start having departments raise their own file servers,
sure,
do a little bit of work there, and then at some point you catch up with some of the other infrastructure, but you keep some of it. So there's a lot of rationalization going on right now to leverage infrastructure, for instance, for backup, for replication itself, some shared storage situations where you were required, right, to have shared storage for file server clustering. So people start with small little servers under their desk at times, and then they evolve. And when they want that better service, that's when they say, oh, let's bring this all into a managed infrastructure. And that's when those migration projects usually start, other than the hardware retirement case where you mentioned as well.
Yeah. Best practices analyzer for Windows Server 2008 R2 file services. The best name ever.
Yeah, we come up with some pretty long names.
Yeah, that's a whopper. And it's so this is a BPA specifically for file services.
Yeah, and it's actually something we did as a team with the Moochbo team. So there's the basic SMB service, which is the protocol that we use, right? SMB2 for file services.
Right.
There's the DFSR, there's DFSN, there's client-side caching. So there's a whole lot of components in the file services, and these are different groups of people that create and manage that code. So as far as the effort to get best practices analyzer for everyone, we're coming up, we just released that a while back, but we were thinking about what are the basic rules that you probably don't want to miss when you're doing this. So for instance, the site configuration, information, right? And, some of the details about the service being enabled in a certain way, if you're using, a certain type of namespace. And there are a whole lot of details that one might overlook, and they basically created this series of checks to make sure that you have these things in place. Some of them are obvious, but you might overlook that in a specific server out of a few that you have. Some of them are actually very educational when you look at and say, oh, you have to have this specific setting. And people say, oh, why is that? What does sites in Active Directory have to do with DFS? And then we have that moment when you can get to explain why that is, right?
Right.
And it's a great thing to run. I mean, it's not something that's going to change anything in your environment. It's kind of a health report.
Right. Just going to make some suggestions. But I'm thinking, because DFS is so deep into AD, if your AD is healthy, arguably your DFS is healthy.
Well, it helps. There are some specific configurations that are not directly related to AD, right? So, for instance, typically we go by the site configuration, but you have an override that you can say, oh, ignore site configuration, always use this one, right? So there are specific DFS settings that you could put in place to override. And then there's the whole replication piece, which is not done through Active Directory at all, right? I mean, you have the configuration stored in Active Directory, but the replication services are completely independent for the file piece and the Active Directory piece.
Yeah, makes sense. Jose, any final words there? Places people should be looking for more information about DFS?
I believe that there's plenty of information about DFS out there. What I would recommend is to make sure that if you're planning something, but you're not quite ready to do the migration or consolidation right now, that might actually be a great moment to start thinking about DFS. Because as we mentioned, it's better to actually create the DFS infrastructure ahead of your migration and consolidation project, let the users ease into that system, and then later on when you actually have to do it, it's so much simpler.
Right.
And it's amazing how people actually, we had the service for quite some time, but folks still use physical file server names in their past. And that is definitely something you should avoid. You should always have DFS, even if you're just pointing to the one server, to the one copy, even if you're doing, if you're not doing any replication at all, you never know what the future holds, right? So as you grow, as you get more complex configurations, get that domain namespace infrastructure in place, and then you're ready for the future.
Jose Brito, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Jose.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.